You're listening to the Empty Stringers podcast, where every week we talk about locating, catching, and the conservation of redfish. My hope is to share with you what I'm seeing from the polling platform so that together we can catch more fish. Think of it as your weekly fishing report. Welcome back to the podcast, folks. I'm your host, Matt Parrish, and today is Wednesday, as usual, and I am pulling the kid. The kids are not going to school tomorrow, the little ones. We are flying to the Bahamas because in a moment of weakness, a few months ago, my wife asked me if we could go to the Bahamas, and I said yes. And our friends, Garrett and Haley, that live close by, their kids are friends with our kids, and they go to school together, and we've been really close with Garrett and Haley for a long time. They are going with us, so I am not going to get to fish this week unless I do it in the Bahamas, but the chances are slim for that. We don't call these kinds of trips family vacations. We call them family trips because a vacation is where you get to relax. And when you take your kids anywhere, that you don't get to relax. So it's a family trip, not a family vacation. But I did get to fish 2 days last week. I fished on Friday with my cousin Gregory. And Gregory's been out with me before with his buddy Jaden. Gregory is a great fisherman. He's got a great eye for casting. He can throw it a mile. He can hit the spots he needs to hit. He's intuitive. He's good at it. He's a joy to fish with. So he came out on the boat, and it was pre-tournament day, so we were scouting things out. So my game plan was mid-bay, shallow shell, ledges, reefs, that kind of thing. I thought that's where I was going to find my bigger fish. But as I have been doing every time I go out, I'm checking the parts of the marsh that have water. Sometimes that's more main lake close to the ICW area. Sometimes it's a little further back. It depends on what the water has been doing over the past few days. So the water went way up a couple days before the tournament. The Galveston Redfish Series hourly tournament is the tournament I'm talking about. So water went way up and kind of flooded the back areas pretty good, but that doesn't mean that the fish are going to get way up in the back, but it did mean that they probably were going to surge up into the early stages of the marsh and root around. And so did we catch any fish out in the mid-bay reef stuff? I don't think we did. But we went back to some marshy areas and caught, Gregory caught a 27-inch fish that weighed maybe a little over 7 pounds. Of course he did, right? That's what you do the day before the tournament. But I knew that the area we were in was going to still be holding water the next day. And so I just kind of made a mental note that we needed to go back there. So we tried a few other places, caught another fish or two, and that was that. The wind the following day was low. Conditions were good. Water was semi-clear because it got cold overnight. And I had my son, Reed, with me. So Reed has not been on the water for about 2 or 3 months. And so I was a little worried that, you know, his first day back in the game is going to be throwing him to the wolves in a tournament. But he did fine. A few backlashes early on to get used to the setup, and he kind of got it dialed in, and we were off to the races. So tried the mid-bay stuff early and found fish, but found small fish. Rat reds to somewhere around the 21, 22-inch slot. That wasn't what we were looking for. So we picked up and moved pretty early. Only spent about an hour in that in that mid-bay stuff. And when we moved, we went to the area that Gregory and I had been in and caught that 27-inch fish. So as soon as I get there, I shut down, crawl up on the platform. We hadn't pulled but 20 feet. We spooked a redfish, and I got a good look at him as he swam off. And he was the kind of redfish we were looking for. I could tell he was, you know, upper slot, had some shoulders. So that fish spooked off, and I watched him. I watched his wake, and I watched where he slowed down. He had kind of headed right for this little cut that I always pull through. But instead of turning and pulling straight through there, I didn't want to spook that fish. I wanted him to settle down, potentially start feeding. And so we milled around in some back ponds and a little canal and stuff, and like did some stuff off away from that cut. And then about 15 minutes later, 20 minutes later, I pulled on through that cut. And as we got close to it, we could see what I believe to be that fish. And the reason I think it was that specific fish, right now, there are not a whole lot of redfish in the marsh. There are some. You can go put a stringer together of three or four fish fairly consistently, but you're going to have those days where you're going to catch one and two fish if you're fishing in the marsh right now. But we had not seen any redfish in all the little areas that we piddled around in before we went back to this cut where I saw this redfish drift off to. We saw zero. So going back there, we see this fish. He's in about 3 inches of water, half his body out of the water, slithering in the mud, eating whatever he was eating. I did not get a good look at it. But Reed, we kind of banked up in a shallow spot. Reed throws the first cast, throws it on the tail end of the fish. I had him reel that in. He throws it to the head end of the fish. Fish turns around. He reels that in. His third cast was a good cast, drags it about a foot, foot and a half in front of the fish. But when you're in that shallow of water, I mean, he's in 3 inches of water. You got to get a little closer. So I said, look, pull it back, put it out there. I think it was his fourth or fifth cast. He drags it right in front of the face of that fish, and that fish annihilated it. And when he did, Reed set the hook so hard, I thought he was going to break my Laguna lattice, but it held up just fine. But he absolutely ripped his lips and then just instantly started cranking on the fish. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, I'm trying to teach him that, you know, when you set the hook on a slot redfish, you should set the hook and hold and wait. That fish is going to run. And when he runs, when he's done with that run, then you start taking line back from him. But you're going to crank drag. You're going to potentially break something. Let that fish make his run. Let him get it out of his system. Then you can start working him in. Well, the fish was so shallow, he started doing the alligator death roll and wrapping the line around his gill plate. And I was worried about that because we had been fishing around shell earlier. But thank God, we land the fish. He ended up being like 26 and three quarters of an inch or 7/8. It was like almost 27 inches. He weighed, but he's kind of skinny. He weighed 6 pounds, 6.28, 6 pounds and 28. And what is that? 28 ounces, I guess. I don't know. 6.28 was the weight. So get that fish in the box, and we continue on. I told Reed, I said, look, this is the hourly tournament. It's not the youth tournament. We're with the big guys. So you got to get back up there and pole. So he gets up there and poles, but we're getting close to time to decide whether we needed to go to weigh-in or not. And I said, look, the minor starts at 10. I don't want to be at the weigh-in when that happens. I want to be fishing. So let's go weigh this fish in. So we go up there. We pull up. There are two fish on the board, and there are two boats waiting at the dock. And I can tell they have fish. So the way the strategy works with this hourly tournament is like, if you have really whatever, doesn't matter what you have, you roll up and you don't pull your fish out of the box first. You walk up and look at the board and see what people have already weighed in. So we go up there. There was like a 7-something, 7.29 or something like that weighed in, and then a 4.5. Well, we knew we had the 4.5 beat. There was no third place fish on the board. So I tell Reed, it's like 9:45, 9:50. I'm like, let's just weigh in. So we grab his fish, we go weigh in. It ends up being a 6.28. He's sitting in second place. Third place is 4-something, but we got two guys sitting out here in a boat with sandbagged fish. So if you have a fish that you're not sure how it's going to do, you typically will wait and see if the leaderboard gets filled up. And if not, you come in at the last minute with your subpar or your average fish, and you may win money. If you don't, you wait till the next hour turns over and be the first person to weigh in. You let the chips fall where they may, right? That's kind of the strategy. So I walk past, and I tell the guy, Alan, hey, man, you guys got a sandbagger in there? And he's like, oh, he wouldn't really say. So we hang around and watch. Sure enough, he pulls his fish out, and he thinks it's going to be a second place fish. He thinks he's got our fish beat, but he doesn't. It's a 6.2. So we're still in second place. We hear him say, all right, 9 o'clock hour's closed. I'm like, sweet. We start to walk off. Well, I guess there was still a minute left. And the other boat comes running up with a weighable fish and bumps Reed into third place. So Reed won third place in the 9 a.m. hour. We go back out, go to a different area, and here's where I pulled a little trick out of my back pocket. So this is why I preach water level and knowing your area, knowing what your area looks like. When you look at the MLLW and you know what time of year it is and you see what the MLLW reading is at your nearest gauge, you should be able to look at that reading. You should be able to know in your head, where can you go? Where can you not go? Where were you catching fish last? And how deep is it there right now? That's how you need to get to know your area. Well, I knew there's an area that usually gets a lot of traffic, but no one's been in there in months, at least 2 months, 2 or 3 months, because the water's been so low. The mouth of this area is too shallow. Most people can't get over it. But I've been paying attention the last few weeks when I'm roaming around. Even if I got somebody in the boat, I'm not telling them that's what I'm doing. I'm just thinking, all right, I'm looking, driving by, keeping an eye on this area because I want to see how high it needs to be for me to get in there. So I knew, based off the day before, that we were going to be able to get in there, but it wasn't going to be in the morning. I needed to wait for the tide to come up a little bit, and it was going to be kind of a midday thing. So when we left the weigh-in, we piddled around in another area quickly, and it ended up still being too shallow. So we go back to this spot that I've been waiting to get in and slide over the shallow hump of the mouth. Almost had to get out and push it, but I get it in there. As we're getting in there, this is not a large area. It's fairly narrow. As we get in there and we push back and we start fishing, there's another boat that has seen us do it. And now they're trying to do it. And I'm like, okay, what are you going to do if you get back here? Because I'm looking at this guy's boat. He's not going very, very far past where we're at because it's going to be too shallow. I can take one look at his boat. I can tell he ain't going to get back there, but they're trying. They're actively trying to get back where we are. I'm like, bro, we're already fishing this spot, man. Like, what do you think you're doing? But he can't get back there. He rolls up. I see him try a couple times. He goes, we ain't getting in there. And then they take off. And I'm like, yeah, that's a good move. So we get back in there and we start seeing redfish. We spook a decent sized redfish. I turned around and chunked at him from the platform. couldn't see him anymore. Just drug my lure through where I thought he was. Reed makes a cast, does the same thing. Bam, nails him. Reed hooks up, lands that fish. He crawls on the platform. That fish ended up being, I think that fish ended up being in the fives. I can't remember exactly what. I remember it was a 580, 5.8. So still good fish. I get on the bow, start slinging the paddle tails. I was throwing the Caden. What's the name of that color? Is it Blazing Chicken? I don't know. I'm not good at learning the names of things when it comes to the colors, but I had the Caden, you know, 4.5 or 4 inch, whatever it was, paddle tail on. I catch a fish that I think is somewhere around, you know, the high fours, maybe a low five. Put him in the box, and we're trying to upgrade at that point. We've got two more fish to weigh in. From the looks of the early weigh-in, it was going to be a rough day for a lot of people. There were some heavy hitters that I could tell were starting to strike out. And so we go back and weigh in at the 1 o'clock hour, and my fish doesn't place, but Reed's fish was sitting in second place up until the last minute, and two dudes rolled up with 2 6-pluses and put Reed out of the money. So he was disappointed, but we had such a good time out on the water. It was a beautiful day. The marsh is starting to come alive, but the water is going to fall out of it on Saturday. If you're fishing the saltwater survival series on Saturday, then you probably better be looking for protective water. You got a strong northwest wind that's going to blow if the forecast doesn't change. Be looking for protected water and be looking for areas that the fish are going to come out of those marshes. And there's just not a whole lot of fish in the marsh right now, though. But all the ones that are, they're coming out. So be looking for those areas and, you know, stage yourself in a protected area that has some kind of structure, some kind of spill out. It's the only thing you can hope for. When you're in a kayak and the wind's blowing like that. So good luck to all you guys. I hope you're safe. Don't do anything dumb just because it's a tournament day. But what we have to look forward to in the coming weeks is these couple of days we've had of low wind, that's about to stop. It's going to stop probably in a couple of weeks, and you're going to start seeing the normal everyday wind to be 15 miles an hour sustained. And that's a bummer, but that's what has to happen for the shrimp to kick off. It's just all part of the equation. So we need that wind. It's going to help pump water levels up along with that full moon that's coming. All of it has to happen for things to get really good. So I wouldn't go nuts for the marsh just yet. There's still some fish to be caught in there, but like we caught three fish all day. We probably saw 20 fish all day, but a lot of them were like spooking off really fast. No chance to get a toss at them. They're sitting in the mud. You roll up on them, spook them, and they're gone. You know, they're not fired up yet. Things just aren't happening yet. But we're getting closer. We got to be a little more patient. So that's coming. The shad are going to kick off first, and they're going to kick off in high numbers, and you're going to see them in and around areas with freshwater inlets. So think about any kind of creek that's going to feed your marsh. Think about the diversionary canal. Think about, any of your bayous that come in, any of your rivers. All the little tail spinoffs of all that stuff, you're going to start to see shad bunch up in those areas. And the bite's going to be tough there, but you can catch fish. That's when you got to throw something that's going to annoy the crap out of them. Throw a wake bait, throw a topwater, throw, You know, a lot of times we say match the hatch. Everybody says match the hatch. I don't subscribe to that all the time in the spring. I will always start out matching the hatch. I'll throw the smallest paddle tail I can throw. But sometimes you're just one in a bajillion when you do that. And you need something that's going to aggravate the fish and stand out, almost like a competing predator that's edible, right? So that's where a topwater can come in handy, a wake bait. We've talked about all that stuff. Do those things. If you're going to do that, throw Kevin's Outside custom painted lures or a Diamond G custom painted, whatever. You can get them at Fish Sticks. You can get Kevin's baits at Anglers Anonymous. After all that talk of the reel cleaning maintenance, I've got to take one of my reels in. I have a brake part that's broken. I thought I had it fixed, but it keeps falling off. So I've got to take it in. And one of my little discs in the brake keeps coming unsnapped. So I've got to take that in. I've only got, you know, the other two are rigged and ready to go now. But I'm also booking. I had three spots fill up this week, and there's more to come. So if you would like to book a trip with me, Capt, Matt with two T's, Parish with two R's, .com. There is an Airbnb link to my place on the water down in Bayou Vista. I have a kayak already sitting there ready to go. You come down, you fish out of my kayak. I've got paddle boards down there. Paddleboard around there. The marsh is a quick paddle. There's a part of Pierce's marsh is a very quick paddle from my place. And then book a trip with me while you're down, and let's go fishing. And then you can fish on your own on the day or two that you stay there. So that would be fun. You can do that at CaptainMattParish.com. If you are going to, so I promised last week that we were going to do a giveaway, a Caden lure giveaway. Well, I'm going on vacation, so I don't think now is the best time. Why don't we do it next week? I've got to get my ducks in a row for that. So I'm going to maybe give away an empty stringers package deal, if you will, putting together something like that. I think that would be cool. We'll do it next week. That way you don't have to wait on me to get back from vacation before you get it delivered. So that sounds like a plan. Now, let's move on to our Bible tidbit. We talked last week about why bad things happen to good people. I wanted to tag onto that a little bit, a perspective about a biblical perspective about our own mortal lives. So we tend to find our own sufferings, our own problems to be a great deal, a big deal. I guess what I'm trying to say is we're hyper-focused on our own world. Have you noticed that if you have a habit of praying, your prayers typically, at least here in the Western world, this is common, your prayers tend to camp out in areas based on your own safety and security and prosperity, right? Typically, you're asking for God to keep you safe, to help things go well with whatever problem you have. And that's fairly normal. I'm guilty of the same thing. But the thing I want to help you understand today is that that's not exactly a biblical principle. So it is true that, like, you can look at King David's prayers in the Psalms, and he does ask for safety, and he does ask for God to ruin his enemies and all that stuff. There's a place for that. But I think us as Westerners, have become so fixated on God as our genie in a bottle, so to speak, and God as like our, the one that's, you know, supposed to protect us and prosper us and all those things. And yes, that's true. But I guess my point in the matter is our focus shouldn't be on those things. Our time on earth is so small. It's so quick. We should be focused on eternity. We should be focused on the kingdom and the good works that God has for us to do. And we should be inviting everyone in to taste and see how good it is, right? So Isaiah chapter 40, verse 6, a voice says, cry. And I said, what shall I cry? All flesh is grass, and its beauty is like the flower of the field. The grass withers, the flower fades when the breath of the Lord blows on it. Surely the people are grass. The grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of our God will stand forever. There's a passage in Matthew, I think it's Matthew 6, that talks about, hey, don't worry about what you're going to eat, what you're going to wear. Like, the lilies of the valley are clothed in more splendor than the kings of the earth, and God knows that you need them. The sparrows are fed, and they don't reap or sow. God feeds them, and you are more precious than the sparrow. God knows what you need. Stop focusing so much on that. Focus on Him. Focus on your relationship with Him, the beauty that He has to offer, and the good works that He has for us to do. So that is our Bible tidbit. The reason I bring that up and I tag it in on why do bad things happen to good people is because part of the way we understand things when bad things happen is that they're just so important, they're so devastating, right? If your perspective is on eternity, and in that perspective, you live in a way that says, look, this thing that I have here as a body is just a shell, and it's important. It's you know, Scripture talks about our bodies as the temple, and we are to take care of them and use them as an instrument for the gospel, right? But our life here is so brief. We are the dew on the morning grass that's going to dry up by lunchtime. We're a flower in the field that's going to wither away in no time. So if your perspective is on eternity, then you can reframe those bad things by both understanding how brief our time here on earth is and by understanding that God is sovereign over everything and He's working all things for our good and His glory. That's our Bible tidbit for the week. So glad that you guys are listening into the podcast. I appreciate you. Tell a buddy about it. I know that it's been less technical talk than what I usually get into. And folks, that's because it's Groundhog's Day out there. We're in the same holding pattern. We're looking for fish in mid-bay shallow structures. We're focusing in on major and minor feeding times on the solunar cycle. We are checking the marshes to see when the bait is going to hatch. But other than that, we're just grinding it out, you know. So as things begin to change, we're going to see a few weeks in a row where it's just going to be, wow, okay, this is different. Now this is different. Now this is different. And we're going to get in onto some really hardcore tactics on how to target the fish. If you have a question for me that you'd like for me to cover on the podcast, email it to emptystringers@gmail.com. Book the trip on CaptainMattParish.com. You can book a night stay at the Airbnb there as well. If you want to buy a Sabine poling skiff, come take a ride on mine first. I'll take you for a spin. You can see what it's all about. Brian is working on something that I'm, again, not allowed to talk about. I feel like I'm starting to get some of those phone calls. So I cannot talk about it, but it's going to be freaking awesome. So, we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. He's coming out with something new, I think, sometime this year. And if he doesn't, he kind of has to now because I just said that. And I think he's been on the fence about it. So maybe all of you guys listening out there will make him want to go through with it. So Y'all have a great week, and we'll talk to you next time. I don't have the answers to the ancient myths.